Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast, shared on accessmedia.nz with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora, everyone. Welcome. It is me again, Becky Bateman, on Aotearoa Pathways to Art. Almost forgot my own show there. It's going to be that kind of show. Good afternoon, it's me. And today for our show, we are fully booked in the studio today with three beautiful ladies. We have Karen Cirione, Emmy Efford, and Catherine Lloyd. And you are my fabulously wonderful women who are doing an exhibition at Aotearoa at the moment.
Oh, thank you.
You are wonderful. You are. Now, if you haven't heard any of our shows before, this is episode 21, believe it or not, on Arrow FM. If you haven't listened before, you can go back and listen to any of the previous 20 episodes on online on Arrow FM, and you can just download it then and use it as a podcast, fall asleep to my voice if you wish. But generally what we do is we talk to artists, people in the community who are doing an exhibition at Aotearoa, and we just have a little bit of a discussion really about what you're doing, your exhibition, your ideas, that kind of thing, just so when people do go into Aotearoa they can understand a little bit more about your exhibition and kind of what it's all about. So, ladies, Karen, would you like to introduce yourself? Who are you?
So I'm Karen Cirione. I used to teach at Vic University, but I've taken early retirement in order to do some creative stuff and some writing projects, but especially art projects with my two former students who are also my good friends and my teachers now.
The roles have reversed.
I think they have. Yeah.
Okay. Emily, who are you? Why are you here?
I'm a freelance graphic designer and illustrator / mixed media artist. I'm here to share basically the collaboration that the three of us have come up with over the years that's been really enriching to my life, and it's really made a big difference to me emotionally. Since I moved from Wellington to the Wairarapa, it's been a bit of a cultural change, and having the creative friendships really made a big difference there. So
I think you're right, it is quite a cultural change coming from, because I came from Wellington as well a couple of years ago, and the Wairarapa is completely different, isn't it? It's a whole different culture to kind of get your head around. So yeah, I'm with you on that. And Catherine, who are you and why are you here?
Well, so I'm Wellington based. I'm a retired dentist. I was a dentist for a long time, but always had a creative streak. Always loved doing embroidery. That was my stress management program, which also introduced me to an amazing community of friends and fellow stitchers. And part of that journey took me into the world of French study at Vic, as Karen said. And we met during postgraduate study. Karen was our teacher. And we discovered that we all had a creative streak and a very common love of France and art, like especially surrealism. And so that's opened a whole world of joy to us, the three of us, and I think we work together really well as a collaboration.
I agree.
We're quite different personalities, but
you really are. You really the three of you.
We do work well together as a team.
Awesome. Karen, do you want to tell us a little bit about how you three know each other? What's kind of the backstory between you three? How do you know each other? Because if Emily and Catherine, kind of Wellington-based for a little while, now you're back over here. How did you all kind of meet up? How do you actually know each other?
So, as Catherine said, Catherine and Emily were both French students of Vic, and I really got to know them in their postgraduate phase when I was their supervisor for research projects. So Emily on Remedios Varo and her connection with the Paris Surrealists, Catherine on the history of embroidery and lace from the court of Louis XIV through to Schiaparelli. And apart from the excitement of working alongside capable students and learning with and from them. In the course of study, I saw some of the works they were doing out of school and was so deeply impressed by it that I thought how wonderful if they could exhibit. And so, and I love theatre, which means that the kind of collaboration that we have that Emily talked about, in a way that's also common to theatre, because you bring different talents and abilities together to make one show. And that's also why in the two shows we've now done together, we've created a kind of theatrical set that enables people to come in and look at works of art, but to have their minds somehow put into it, sent on a new direction, opening new pathways, and putting them in the right state of mind to be receptive to different visions.
I'd love to be a fly on the wall on that conversation of, hey, Catherine, hey, Emily, I've got an idea. Would you like to come and do an exhibition? I mean, how did that happen? Was one of you like, oh, I don't think so? Or you both like, sounds quite fun, Karen, let's go.
I think we jumped on it.
I think I can speak for Emily too. I don't think I hadn't exhibited. I'd always stitched. But not actually put it in the public arena very much and didn't know how to do it, really. And I knew that Karen, I'd seen Karen's work, I'd seen her set designs and I'd seen her costume designs and had always been in awe of it. And I think it became obvious that if we were going to do something, that it should be different and it should not just be something on the wall, that it should... The strength of the collaboration, or Karen's strength in particular, was set design, and so would give us an opportunity if we went that way to exhibit works in a fun way, using her special talents.
So, and also to bring together different media and make them feel like a cohesive whole.
Yeah.
And that is absolutely what you did, because your first show, was it 2021? The Disappearing Woman.
Yeah.
Quite a surreal show, I think I have to say. Karen, do you want to briefly describe what The Disappearing Woman was all about?
So
it was your first show together.
On a literal level, and of course we studied surrealism together, it was an acknowledgement of the fact that women surrealist artists were less well known and less honoured and respected than men surrealist artists. So it was, and it was a response also to the fact that certain artistic skills in crafts like embroidery and metalwork were seen as lesser forms of artistic expression. And as Catherine said, we also try to do something fun, and so we actually, literally, we created a scenario of a disappearing woman shut in a Victorian parlour who, taking her cue from a Magritte painting to which I'd added a female figure, dived out of the restrictions of the Victorian parlour. So Catherine had done these wonderful feet diving into a footstool with splashes of crystal water. And Emily had done amazing things with the surrealist die and the game, so we had a table set up. So it was a small space, but like a Victorian parlour. It was crowded, and crowded with incident as well. So we told stories with our art and our set.
It was extraordinary. I think that was the first time I met you three, and I was like, these women are pretty special. Amazing, like you say, kind of a set, but almost like an installation and a diorama kind of all rolled into one, wasn't it? It was so much to look at, and just that whole story, it was fantastic. So you did one, and you thought, want to do another one. What's Dream Gardens about? Who's going to take this one on? Go on then. Emily? Karen, over to you again. Dream Gardens. What is Dream Gardens? What was the idea behind Dream Gardens, and why did you think you wanted to do a second exhibition?
So first of all, well, we will probably go on collaborating until we're dead.
No pressure.
think it's a little bit like having a baby. You forget about the labour part after some weeks.
That's right.
You just enjoy it.
I mean, that's right.
Except well, things like that.
Yeah, I think that...
It's a very good analogy.
Yeah, it is. We've had, of course, it's stressful both for ourselves and the people who live with us just before an exhibition is installed. But we have been on such a wonderful journey, even though I hate that word. We've all learned things along the way from each other, and the Dream Gardens notion was partly chosen because it's quite open-ended. We knew we could take it anywhere. And I love gardens, and I just have started to take an interest in flower painting and all that sort of thing. And so I actually put it to Emily first in her back garden, and she was interested, and then I suggested it to Catherine. The word dream also enabled us to refer back to our surrealist perspectives from the first exhibition. And gardens are fascinating, the history of gardens, not only real gardens, but the gardens of even marginalia, the illustrated, old illustrated manuscripts, where words on the page are pollinated by extraordinary images. So it was a rich topic, but also a very kind of simple and open one. And probably, apart from seeing Emily and Catherine's work in the space, the other thing that has touched me most about this was actually seeing your education officers' collaboration and stimulation of children. Sorry, if you're listening, of young adults and teachers doing the most extraordinary, wonderful things. And for me, art is an invitation to connect with others, and it's also a you have the possibility of stimulating art in others. So it's not a finite work. It's like, well, here's what I thought. What do you think?
And that's almost the most interesting kind of art, I think, for people, that they can have their own level as they go through and actually kind of take away something that maybe they have learnt and kind of, you know, it's absorbed in the garden as well, but also learning something new. Do you want to give us a mental picture of what's in this space? It's a bigger space than last time, isn't it? It's in the main gallery this time, so you've been upgraded to the main gallery.
Which was a bit scary, actually.
Yes. I remember you three, when you first came in, and were like, we're in the main gallery. You're like, oh, my God, it's so big. Oh, my goodness, what are we going to do? And then suddenly, I know this happens to me all the time, like the space contracts and gets bigger, and you're like, how am I going to fit everything in? It's just, you know, the space changes so much. But I think what you've done with the space, because we're installing this week, aren't we? I've dragged you three away from installing. It's fabulous what you've done with the space. So do you want to try and paint a picture of what is in this space? What would people see when they come into this kind of set, almost, of this dream gardens?
So Karen has had the overall vision of the set that's really tying it all together. It's quite a formal arrangement, and within that, it really has just created a structure for us to play, basically, and display our various different specialties to best advantage. Catherine's embroidered works, Karen's paintings and dioramas, and my pieces of metal, which I've got a background doing some jewellery design. I just basically learnt doing night classes in Wellington, but more recently, I've just really started to enjoy working on a bigger scale and started working in making pieces out of secondhand bakeware, which I find in op shops.
That's a really clever way to do it. Nice recycling opportunity as well.
It's satisfying on a few different levels because I can go through the foraging experience, which is, I guess, like... You know, I used to enjoy beach combing when I lived in Wellington. I can't do that out here. There's no beaches, so...
Op shop combing.
Yeah, op shop combing, trawling. Yeah.
Excellent.
And then problem solving, how to break down, you know, baking tins and sheets and...
How do you do that?
Well, using the jewellery tools and techniques, but just, yeah, it is quite physical, some of it, because it's, you know... big heavy pieces that take a long time to cut, so I've had to come up with my own techniques in some ways, but Yeah, so I feel like my work is still jewellery-like, but it's on a large scale and it's on the wall.
But you do have some jewellery for sale in the shop, don't you?
I do, yes. Currently some earrings, and I will be making some more over summer.
Keep you busy.
Different sorts, yeah.
So you've got your beautiful birds, but you've also got a sneaky little Easter egg from your last show, haven't you? Snuck in That's into right. this show as well. What have you brought from the Spoon Woman, and why is it in this show as well?
So that piece is called The Disobedient Plant, and in the last show all my pieces were really nods to Varro, Remedios Varro's work. As Kieran mentioned, that was my thesis topic in my postgraduate degree, and she's really a big artistic inspiration to me. So, yeah, in her work she really covered the gamut from psychology to the latest scientific discoveries to spirituality, and there's just so many different facets to her work that it wasn't at all hard in that exhibition to come up with multiple pieces. But this one, Disobedient Plant, one of her paintings was of an alien botanist discovering a disobedient plant on an alien world, and so this is a homage to that. It's a metal plant that's creeping out from underneath a cloche. It won't be contained.
No, it won't. I'm so delighted it's back in this show, because it was one of my favourite pieces from the last one.
Yeah.
And I'm delighted it's back here. But yeah, I love that whole fact of the roots are just kind of sneaking out. They're like, I'm not going to be contained. Yeah. And do you think you've learnt quite a lot from doing The Disobedient Plant a couple of years ago to this year's work?
Yeah, I think I have. I've simplified my techniques a little bit this time around because it's on a bigger scale and things had to be very solid. Particularly the lotus that's hanging from the ceiling. I really learned a few lessons on what not to do last time. so I think I've learned and evolved, but hopefully the style is...
Beautiful. And Catherine, do you want to tell us a little bit about your works that you've got in the show?
Oh, well...
Where to start?
I've got a few different things. I think probably my favourite is my coal frame, which houses an elegant Versailles-style garden. I must comment here that it's housed in a coal frame made by Ron from the men shed, and it's absolutely fabulous.
It is astonishing.
So thank you, Ron, if you're listening. And it's a perfect... place to showcase the garden. So the garden is about 1.5 metres by 0.5 metres. It's quite big. It's the biggest project I've ever stitched. It's taken 9 months to stitch it. I was wondering whether to have a raffle to work out how many stitches are actually in it.
Oh, you should. How many do you think? It must be millions.
It must be millions. And it's been something that I had thought about before this exhibition. I love very formal gardens. So I'm a great lover of topiary and chateau-style gardens, I suppose, French-style gardens. My own gardens like that. And I'd always wanted to stitch a big garden. And my inspiration also came from a tutor I met from the Royal School of Needlework called Owen Davies, who published a book and loved that style of stitching as well. And so he was very inspirational in techniques that I've used in this particular work. So, it's large, colourful, and has one particular stitch, turkey stitch, which I'll probably never do again.
Because I've done so many times. Was that the one
it's
on the base?
It's the one that makes the hedges.
Yeah. Oh, the hedges.
So, I think I'll move on from turkey stitch. And so that's my main contribution. And then I have a few nests hanging in the trees and a winter garden. And winter gardens always, to me, I think of Snow Queen and Narnia going through that door. And I love that storytelling aspect of the way we work. Mm. I think three of us do that in the way we present it, is that every item tells a story. It's not just about a technique or a flat image. So, yeah.
Fabulous. And your cold frame is astonishing. I absolutely love it. I just can't keep my eyes off it. Every time I go, I'm like, oh. And every time you look, you see something different, don't you? And those stitches, oh my goodness, just, it's just incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Thank you.
So didn't you say 5 to 6 hours every day for
nearly a year.
I can't even imagine.
I'm still smiling. I've been telling these two that I'm going away on Friday to see my new grandson, and I'm packing. I've got two kits drawn up by somebody else. I'm not going to design anything. I'm just going to sit and stitch something that somebody else has planned just for a few weeks until I get that out of my system and want to start creating my own stuff again.
I suppose it's similar. I watch quite a lot of Bake Off, and every time, you know, when somebody gets kicked out of the theatre, they go, I'm never baking again, ever. And I imagine they always do, but I'm just not going to touch an oven for a couple of months. I imagine it's very similar. I'm not just going to do anything. I'm just going to leave it. And Karen, what's your pieces in the show? Give us a brief overview.
Before I briefly talk about just one of my pieces or two, mention of Catherine's stitching is a reminder that we have discovered in the course of our collaboration that we're all left-handed.
Are you really?
Yeah.
There you go.
But unusually, Catherine actually uses her left hand for writing and painting and whatever, but she uses her right hand for stitching. So that's just a little by the by.
Very good.
So I just briefly talked to two of my works. So there's Bird Dreams in Ultraviolet, which was inspired by an article in the New Zealand Geographic that talked about the way birds see colour, and that in fact what they see is way more bright and extraordinary than what we with our human eyes see. And personally, I love birds. At the beginning of Kim's little film, there's a little clip from our garden of fantails in the trees, and I spend a lot of time watching birds. So, and also the thrush, which is one of the foregrounded birds, was my mother's favourite bird, and so it has quite all sorts of associations. And then just briefly, the dioramas, there are 5 diorama boxes that actually take you through stages of Catherine Mansfield's life, told through gardens and flowers. She, especially towards the end of her life, was strongly drawn towards gardens and the soil, and also toward living in her body more consciously rather than just her mind. She, the dancing at Fontainebleau, she really wanted to join in. So that's something that's obvious in these boxes.
We'll talk more about Catherine Mansfield after some music. So, little hint there, we're going to go into our first music break. And I think, Karen, this is your choice. Karen, do you want to explain why you chose Carnival of the Animals, the Aquarium, by Saint-Saëns? Why have you chosen that piece of music for us?
So, if Simon is listening, which he probably
hello,
isn't,
Simon. Hopefully you're listening.
This is my chance to gesture in his direction. I came up with all sorts of silly ideas for the music for this interview, and he had the classy suggestion of using Saint-Saëns' Aquarium piece from The Carnival of the Animals, and not because it's about gardens, but because it evokes, with its chords and structure and meandering melodies, evokes the dream world, the way we meander in our minds when we're dreaming.
Beautiful. Very good. Okay, well, let's get on with that. It's only a couple of minutes long, so we'll see you in a couple of minutes. Thank you very much, Karen. I think that was your choice, wasn't it? I think that beautiful song, that beautiful... what are we doing? Forgotten how to do anything. I come in every month, and every month I have to kind of remind myself how to... which buttons to press and what to do every single time. Goodness me. So that was a beautiful one. Thank you. That one, Karen, actually, that kind of brought me back to about 15 years ago. I was a teacher many years ago in England, and I was doing some kind of creative writing with some children. And I remember putting that on. And isn't it funny how music just takes you straight back, even that far? And immediately I was straight back in the classroom being a teacher again. Very odd. Okay, thank you very much for that. Now, I thought we would move on to what you want people to expect from the show as they go in. So we've talked a little bit about your individual pieces, but I thought we'll just quickly go over the whole show and what it feels like and what you want people to take away from the show. So I suppose to start off with, as you go into your space, we've actually kind of made like a wall, haven't we, and kind of like almost like a garden space for you to kind of walk into. And so on your right hand side as you walk in, you have your dioramas, Karen. We'll talk about Cavern Mantle later. And then we've got these beautiful trees in the corner. So why do we have, we'll talk about why we have these trees. And then we've got your birds and your, is it the flax on that wall as well?
The iris,
that's right. And then as we move around, we come to your piece, Emily, with your hanging piece from the ceiling. And then right in the centre, almost directly opposite the entrance, we've got this beautiful film made by Kim. Is that right, Emily?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kim Potter.
Kim Potter. And then as we move around, we then have the cold frame, Catherine's beautiful embroidery, and another tree in the corner, and then your birds...
And the disobedient plant,
of course. And in the trees, there's two beautiful nests as well, done by you, Catherine, as well. So why did you choose these pieces? Why did you have these beautiful, enormous white painted trees in the corner? Why have you chosen to have a seat right in the middle of the floor? You know, why did you choose a video? Why are all these pieces put together to kind of create this one kind of almost installation? Who wants to go first? Who wants to say... Go then, Karen. Yeah. Go on.
It just refers us back to what we were discussing prior to the music about theatre and creating a space for people. So the works themselves are there to be enjoyed, but for us also, art in its as we experience it is experienced on many through many different senses. Alas, we haven't been able to provide smell to go with our garden. We did talk about it at one point. But with that beautiful film that Kim has put together, that lovely, dreamy film that captures some of the things we love best about gardens, including, you know, birds, flowers and water. But the actual set, we chose a kind of a midnight moment to represent, because that's from our childhoods, at least, that's associated with the magical hour when things transform and morph into other things.
Almost like kind of Tom's Midnight Garden, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And so as well as the balustrades and pillars and the archway for the film, the two trees actually were inspired by an opera set I once saw in Paris.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and it was super simple, and it had one exquisite tree painted white, and I found it just, I've never forgotten it.
Yeah.
And I was looking for ways to make the space magical so that the works could breathe in an environment that where they would truly resonate with people. And just to the right of the archway with the movie, of course, is essentially a sun lounger from Catherine's garden.
Thank you, Catherine.
Because I was so fascinated when I learned that from my Danish friend that these chairs that we call sun loungers in English are called dream beds.
Are they really?
Yes.
Beautiful.
And it's an invitation, a reminder to people that they can just relax and dream, and encouragement to
to dream when they leave the exhibition also.
So it's quite an immersive show, isn't it? We want people to kind of go in and have a really good look around. Sit on the chair. They're allowed to sit on the chair?
Yeah.
Okay,
on the chair.
Lay on the chair. Watch this movie. It's quite an immersive experience, isn't it? What do you want people to kind of take away from visiting your exhibition? What do you want people to kind of go, actually, if somebody was going to explain, oh, I went to Dream Gardens yesterday and it was, what would you like people to take away from the experience?
I think we want them to feel as though they have just woken up from a dream. You know, they won't necessarily know what it means, but they might have images and thoughts about it, you know, recurring that day for the following week, who knows how long.
Or like Karen, and somebody might see something that show and then 10, 20, 30 years later they'll go, oh, do you remember that beautiful plant that was hanging from the ceiling in that exhibition at Alatoy? Fabulous.
Yes. Yeah, and I think one of the best things about art of any sort, including literature, is that every person responds to it differently, and it's like a conversation between the creator and the audience, and so everyone who visits it will notice different things and will have different feelings about it. Yeah.
Catherine, what would you like people to take away from your coffin, especially your coffin, because that is just so extremely beautiful? What would you like people to take away from that when they see that?
Well, I think a couple of things. One is, I think this exhibition is accessible to everybody and will appeal to everybody. I think, you know, children and older people, all ages. And I think that's important to me, is to make art available to people. And also to show that it can come in all sorts of forms. Because traditionally embroidery is not something that you would generally see in a public art gallery. And I have to give a shout out here to Aratoi, because they have always been very supportive of textiles, fibres, threadwork, stitch.
We do like to try different things.
Yeah, and I think that deserves a pat on the back. And so to have an opportunity to show beautiful stitching and embroidery in a public art gallery is fantastic. For me, it's about showcasing embroidery as well as the kind of artistic concepts behind the whole exhibition, but taking the opportunity to show people that stitch can be fun, can be colourful, can be bright, is a great opportunity for me. So.
And you've actually got a workshop coming up, haven't you, Catherine?
We have, yes. I'm going to teach a class on stitching an insect on December the 7th, I think it is. Yeah. I think it's on the website under events.
Yeah. Only a few spaces left already.
Oh, really?
Yes, yeah, so there's only three spaces.
It's going to be fun.
It is.
And I must say thank you to Marston Creative Communities, because they very kindly sponsored the materials. So the cost is a bargain, an absolute bargain.
It is.
So all the materials are provided, and it'll be an opportunity just to learn some new skills if you don't have them already, but also just to have a really fun day. I'm a great believer in just making the most of the experience, not necessarily producing something that's totally finished and gorgeous and perfect at the end, but just meeting other people who enjoy what you're doing and making new friends, making a new community, and stitching is great for that.
And I went to one a couple of years ago with Leah Creve. I don't know if you know Leah.
Yeah.
She did these beautiful kind of tufted rugs. And I went to one of her workshops. And it was just so lovely just being able to talk to people. Just, you know, sit there, have a cup of tea. Just, you know, do a little bit of rug tufting. Just talk to people all day. And you have no expectations to do anything amazing, like you say. But it was just so relaxing and enjoyable. So I imagine it's going to be exactly the same.
Yeah, it will be.
Do you have to have any prior knowledge of stitching to enjoy your workshop? Or will you be...
I think the requirement would be that you can thread a needle.
I think most people can do that.
Yes, I can help with that. I can help with that. But I think if you can thread a needle and maybe you can do a running stitch, it's fine. You know, you're there to have fun and, you know... It doesn't have to look like my product. It can be whatever you like, and we're just going to have a good time. But you will learn some new things and be fun. And,
do you have to bring an idea with you, or will you be having a few ideas?
No, we have a few ideas. We have a few choices. I think we've got a dragonfly and a butterfly and a moth. And, so the three of them use the same basic techniques. So we can apply those to each of those designs. And so we'll have things all set up, ready to go.
So you don't need to bring anything?
No, well, scissors. Probably scissors. Sharp embroidered scissors, yeah. And I've also offered to take people around the exhibition as a kind of a personal tour to talk about the background stories between the work, behind the works. And I thought that might be quite interesting.
Oh, that'd be fabulous.
To hear a bit more about them.
Yes, and you've also got a piece in little jewels, haven't you, Catherine? You brought
You're quite busy, aren't you?
You say you're bored of stitching, but you're just constant.
Little Jewels, yes, this wonderful fundraising auction that you have.
Starting next week, yes, opening next Friday.
Next week.
Crikey.
Yeah.
Another one.
Yes, I do have a piece in there.
You do. I'm not going to tell you what it's like because it's... But people have to be a detective and go and work out which one's yours.
Yeah, yeah, they'll probably spot it.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. There's a few. The thing with Little Jewels is that artists know it's anonymous, so they almost kind of go and try and pretend to look like someone else's artwork to kind of throw you off.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yes, it's a little bit sneaky because I think Robin White a few years ago did this completely out of her normal range picture, and nobody realised it was her, and like nobody bought it. And so I think it eventually went for a ridiculously cheap price because it was just so unusual and people had no idea that it was hers. I love that. I love it's a little bit sneaky.
Yeah, yeah.
But sneaky. I'm sure as soon as people see the show, they'll go, that one's Catherine's. It's gorgeous.
Yeah,
I know what it is. I'm going to say which one it is, but it
is fabulous. Yeah, so do go and have a look.
Yes, and that's opening next Friday. And that's both exhibitions are actually on for the entire summer, so it'd be a good time to kind of pop down. All right. My next question, and this might be quite tricky or really easy, to all of you. How did you decide what pieces to go in? Because I'm sure you must have had so many ideas and trying whittling them down to actually what pieces you were going to make, what pieces would fit with each other. Because how do you work? Do you meet up really quite often, or do you talk over Zoom and go, look, I've got this amazing idea? How does it work? How do you actually put an exhibition together with three of you who aren't even in the same town or even anywhere near each other? How do you actually going to get a show like this together? Go on then, Karen, go on.
So for our first exhibition, we actually had years of coffees and cafes and meetings. But then for this one, where we've had a year basically to think about it and get it together, it's been a bit more pressured. But we've kept in touch via video call and so on, and show each other what we're doing. We talk about the ideas for what we want to do, and we all say, yeah, that sounds amazing. And there are not really any constraints. And that's where the set comes in. You find a way of tying them all together. But we have the freedom to decide what interests us within those boundaries, so-called. But the other thing is that things are decided down to what we can actually get done in the time. I was going to introduce a very profound, ideologically oriented painting. And I haven't used oils before, so I was going to ask Jane Sinclair to give me some guidance on that, and it was going to be a huge picture. And as time went on, I thought, maybe I'll do that, just a smaller picture. And then gradually I thought, maybe I'll do a really small one in acrylic. And then suddenly I thought, actually, I don't even have time to get the frame ready. So how we decide is what we've managed to finish. And we could have gone anywhere with the ideas. And so
it's always next time.
It's a bit serendipitous. So it's like an ongoing conversation that goes in all directions. And then we draw it all together at the end.
You've obviously done a really good job kind of curating this, Karen, because I see you as the kind of curator and kind of pulling all these things together. Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't feel like you've done your separate things and then just brought it together. It does feel cohesive, which is so clever. And it must be quite challenging. But you've done such a beautiful job, Karen. So well done. It does look so beautiful.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm sure everyone on the radio knows that I've talked about this a lot, that I go to Jane Sinclair classes, and I was utterly surprised to see you just turn up one day. I was like, what's Karen doing here? She can already paint. What's going on? You know, next to all of us novices, and you're just like, off I go. So I was looking forward to seeing some kind of enormous landscapes, and now I know what's happened to it.
Yes, it's disappeared.
It disappeared.
It didn't happen.
So that's good to know.
Great idea, the one that got away. So, it would have been amazing. See, I can say.
So, Karen, just before our next piece of music, would you like to talk about very quickly Catherine Mansfield? How does she fit in to this installation, this set, and what are these five dioramas that you've done?
So we're. Another element that we like to include in our exhibitions is the juxtaposition of both European and Aotearoa New Zealand narratives. And I had actually done research about Mansfield some years ago into a sort of a metamorphosis in her own life in terms of how she responded to things. And one of the things, sort of influences in a way, was her experience of gardens and plants, and she talked about our identity as being like an irrepressible shoot, you know, that pushes through and despite adversity because of it, etc., etc. So there were already quite a lot of images there, and I love dioramas because they're mini theatre sets, and so I've called them the green rooms, and, you know, homage to the theatre world, and also green plants, blah, blah. But it also ties in beautifully with our themes. So, and we are having a round table in February.
Yes, we are, yes.
With two wonderful local people, actually introduced by Becky, Gareth Winter and Rachel Dell. And Cherie, who's the director of the Catherine Mansfield House and Garden in Wellington, is participating in that.
Mm. And it's going to be a really good discussion, actually.
Yeah,
about
it's going to be fun.
All sorts of things. Is it something that people can come with their own questions to ask, or is it something?
Totally, yeah. So it'll be each of them presenting a little, and our beloved Becky is going to be cheering, and we will hopefully all be there, I certainly will be, to field any questions about the exhibition or about gardens.
Now, you very cleverly have got the timing of this exhibition beautifully, because this weekend is also the Wairarapa Garden Tour, isn't it, which I think very clever. Was that a purposeful thing that you did, that you kind of decided to have the opening the day before the gardens?
It was. The fact that we were doing it this year, this summer, that was our toy's idea, in a way, you know, because you said, look, we've got a space here, which also happens to be that wonderful season in gardens when spring segues into summer and they all...
Everything goes bananas.
Yeah. And we were linking up with the Wairarapa Garden Tour, just in a referential way.
Yes.
And it seemed perfect to have the surreal garden show opening at the same time as the real garden show.
Yeah.
They belong together.
They do. Are you all going to go to the garden tour this year?
I am.
Oh,
most
I might
years
see you there.
We have visitors who, family and friends, who need the refreshment of gardens, and they come and stay, and we go around with them.
Do all three of you have, I bet all three of you got beautiful gardens at your houses.
It's very neglected. Inside, working on pieces.
I always say that if my husband's always going, hello, Andy, if you're listening, I should mow the lawn more often, but I kind of go, I'm leaving it for the pollinators, you know. I think that's a good
right.
excuse, isn't it?
That's right.
I've left the daisies and the weeds to be for pollinators. Yeah. That's always a good reason. But, yeah, I can imagine you. That's the last thing on your mind at the moment, is to sort your garden out.
I have ambitions to sort it out over summer, yeah.
Yes. And, Karen, you've sent me so many beautiful photos of your garden, beautiful wisteria and all sorts. I can imagine that you should have your garden on the garden tour, I think. Mm. I think we should petition
for
you
to... Maybe one day when I'm somewhere else. But yes, we have a beautiful garden. It was mostly made by the previous owners of the property, Keith and Tony, and she was a British. She belongs to various daffodil societies and so on. So she loved gardens and she planted. So most of the planting is thanks to her, and we've obviously added some things and taken some things away. But apart from the wisteria, which is breathtaking, and I actually thought one day I should invite Aotearoa staff to have their kind of end-of-year drinks. But it would have to be, you know, under the wisteria, because it is just extraordinary. It's huge, white, waterfall of flowers. Perfume, bees. Absolutely lovely. But when we arrived, I had a hatred for dahlias.
Do you?
I had.
Oh, you had?
So, and there were a few really gorgeous dahlias, but there was a little bed of dahlias that I took again and thought, right, they've got to come out. So I actually took them out. And then over the years, I thought, when some of the ones I'd left, oh, gosh, they're really interesting flowers. They come in extraordinary colours. They have amazing structure. And so now I'm actually a dahlia lover. So I have learned from the garden. And, of course, my favourite thing to do in the whole world is to sit under the trees with a book and watch, for example, last year, a family of fantails with four babies. Yeah.
Oh my goodness, well, that segues quite nicely into our next song, Think About Your Troubles by Harry Nilsson. And this is yours, Emily, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Do you want to give us a reason why you chose this one?
Firstly, it's just a beautiful, beautiful song.
Fair enough.
Secondly, I was thinking about the themes of the garden and, you know, the messages that we're conveying. And one of my pieces is about changing your perspective on things. Which this song is all about also. That's my lotus flower piece where basically it's a metaphor for the self, and you can focus on your roots or you can flower upwards, and the mirror beneath it reflects the roots, so you can also carry on looking down in that direction as well.
Beautifully said. All right, well, let's have a listen to it. I've not actually heard this one, so I'm looking forward to this one.
Nice.
Let's go, let's see if it works.
Sit beside the breakfast table, think about your troubles. Pour yourself a cup of tea, then think about the bubbles. You can take your teardrops and drop them in a teacup. Take them down to the riverside and throw them over the side to be swept up by a current. Then taken to the ocean to be eaten by some fishes who were eaten by some fishes and swallowed by a whale who grew so old he decomposed you. Do. He died to the bottom of the ocean. Now everybody knows that when a body decomposes, the basic elements are given back to the ocean, and the sea does what it ought to. As soon as salty water,
not too good for drinking,
'cause it tastes just like a teardrop.
Goes into a teapot,
which is just about to bubble now. Think about your
quick one, Emily. Goodness. That was gorgeous. I quite liked the animation. So if you didn't see that, you can just go back and watch that on the YouTube channel as well, because that was quite fun as well. Thank you, Emily. That was a great one. So I've actually, we've nearly come to the end of the show already. I told you it would go quickly. We've only got three more questions to go. And so I'm going to each ask each of you your favourite piece. It doesn't have to be your favourite piece. It could be something that maybe Karen, that Catherine's made, or something Emily's made. It doesn't have to be your piece, but what is your favourite piece in the whole show and why? Emily, do you want to go first?
Sure. Catherine's Cold Frame.
Ah! I think that's going to be a winner for most most people. Yeah. Why is that your favourite,
Emily? It's just so detailed, and it's a garden landscape I can just imagine walking through. Mm. Yeah, it's beautiful.
It is absolutely stunning. Did you, when you were talking at the very beginning about kind of Louis XIV and Versailles, is it kind of a lot of inspiration from that?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Have you been to Versailles?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
I know. It's just overwhelming, actually. It's so beautiful. Oh. Yeah. I've got a mini garden like that at home. So at the moment, it's time to be cutting the box hedges because they're starting to sprout everywhere.
Oh, so. I can imagine. It must be quite intensive. Emily and I probably couldn't have a garden
only
with
twice
box
a year,
hedges,
could we? You only have to clip them twice a year. You don't do any more than that. Oh, so they're quite easy, really.
Okay.
And it's quite relaxing doing it.
I think, I cannot imagine clipping box hedges being relaxing.
No, it is.
I mean, to do embroidery, you obviously need a love of repetitive,
yes,
detailed tasks.
Good point.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just taking yourself into another space, isn't it? So, you know, it's meditative,
I suppose,
really.
Yeah. I find that weeding the gravel path on my driveway is quite relaxing, like you're just pulling stuff out. Yeah. So I imagine it's very similar to that. You just kind of get into a bit of a rhythm.
You want to come and do mine? Yeah.
No. Karen, what's your favourite piece and why?
So I'm going to choose two.
Oh.
Catherine's Versailles Garden, which is just utterly gobsmacking, and in its own way, overwhelmingly incredible, as is the real-life Versailles, which is a nice effect. And I find it very difficult to choose. I love all of Emily's pieces, but I think in the end I'll go for the flock, the birds.
Yes, the ones made out of aluminium.
I just love the way she... I love Emily's style, the way she has a clear visual vocabulary. I love the way she's done the birds, the metal, but she's painted very exquisitely in the background of each one. Mm. And I also like the philosophy behind it, that we are in our own space, but we need connection with others.
Yes, because these birds are kind of linked together, aren't they, by chains. Yep. So, beautiful. And they're for sale, so you can have one, two, ten if you wanted.
No, one of them's not for
sale. Oh, that's true. One to nine.
Nine, yeah.
Yes, on that's your wall. Right. Yeah. So everything's for sale this year, isn't it? Because The Disappearing Woman, nothing was for sale. Mm. But this year, apart from the disobedient plant, hopefully that's going to come back to the next show.
That is not for sale, yeah.
Good.
There might have to be a link between all of our
exhibitions. I think it just has to keep appearing.
That's a great idea. It can be a mess.
Yes, yes, yeah, like the constant Easter egg, the constant mascot. And Catherine, what's your favourite piece in the
whole
show?
I'm going to pick two too, because I also picked Emily's flock. I just love the way they're individual, but they form a community. And I think that's
beautifully
applies
said
to family and friends and my stitching community, and what a great asset communities are to keeping us all well and healthy. And so I picked that one, and also Karen's dioramas, because they are so beautiful and they tell stories. I think dioramas are just a beautiful way to tell stories.
It's quite an unusual way. We haven't really had that many dioramas come through our toy.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting way, but you're absolutely right. It's a fabulous way to tell a story.
They're just beautiful. Kind of a bit fantastical as well, a bit magical, a bit like pop-up books.
Mm.
You know, another favourite way to tell stories. So that would be my favourite too. Well, they're all favourites.
Of course they are.
All of the objects in there, and they're just all, wow, you know, I wish I could have that. Wow, I want that.
I'd also like to give a shout out to Karen's overall vision for the scene, because that really makes it.
Yeah.
I think, you know.
Yeah.
It wouldn't work half as well if we didn't have that structure to place everything within. And
absolutely.
And it gave us confidence as well that you had the overall vision resorted.
Mm. And when Karen came in with came to see me, quite near the beginning of the year, really, wasn't it? And you had this whole box set, kind of another diorama, and I was like, I can see what she's trying to do here. I get it. Yeah. Here it is. Yeah. I understand. And it's so clever. You're very good at that kind of 3D, kind of spatially aware of how things work with each other. And it's so, so interesting to see you three work, because you're so different to anyone else I've ever worked with. But it's fabulous. You know, it's so interesting because you're such three fabulous women.
We love working with you. Ara Toy as well. Yeah. And we just want to say on radio how much we appreciate Becky and Sarah and Adam, all of the Ara Toy staff. We actually don't want to exhibit anywhere else.
No.
it's become like a kind of home in a way. And that's because they're willing to take risks and are very daring. But regarding the set, I just want to say thank you to my partner Simon and two friends who painted the cream balustrades, because I had an injury this year, and so there were lots of things that I needed help with. Mm. And so this is an exhibition about connection and gratitude towards each other and how we can encourage and inspire each other.
Beautifully said, Karen. Well done. Final question, and this might be, you might have nothing, you might go, actually, all of it, but what was the hardest thing about this exhibition? What was the thing you've kind of taken away and gone, actually, that was quite difficult, and next time I'll do something differently, or maybe you won't do that particular thing at all. Was there anything particularly challenging this time around?
For me, it's just really been time management, particularly since I'm a freelancer, so I'm juggling a variable workflow all the time anyway. And it has felt quite pressured at times this year.
Hopefully you're going to relax after this is open. And I don't have to make any more metal birds.
I'll relax after the artist talk, probably.
Okay. That's in February.
Yeah. December, isn't it? Aren't we doing a...
December 7th. Oh, no, 14th. December 7th is a workshop. December 14th.
Yeah. Karen, what's been a challenge for you?
Any number of things, but the most annoying challenge was that at the last minute, there was a little panic about the space, and I thought, I know, why don't I borrow my friend's garden iron sphere and put lights on it? And
so
it was a
nightmare. How big was the sphere?
I know. So this is about a mistake, everybody. And it was really, it was generous of them to allow us to use this Will Jamieson sculpture, but driving it in the trailer, I was so terrified that it was going to roll off and cause a major traffic incident. And then, of course, we decided, as we put our things into the set, that we absolutely didn't need it at all. So, and this morning we took it away. And something about it's huge, it's heavy, it's unwieldy, and we need to call on several people to give up some time. And so that was in a way the hardest part. For me.
Catherine, what was yours?
Same as Emily, time management. Just a year seems like a long time, but in fact, practically, logistically, it's quite hard.
It goes quickly, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I'd just like to give a shout out, because I've just got a brand new baby grandson.
You do indeed.
Last week, and he came a bit early, so it's come in the midst of all the setting up, and I've missed kind of going down. So I'm going down on Friday after the opening. So I'd like to give a shout out to my beautiful daughter and my new grandson.
Woo-hoo. Has he got a name?
He's got a trial name. I'm not going to say what it is.
Okay. I love that trial name. Karen, do you want to finally tell us about the opening on Thursday?
So it's at 5:30.
Everyone's welcome.
It's normally on a Friday, but it's on a Thursday this year. And some of our lovely whānau and friends are going to be there. And it'll be a chance, one of those rituals that one has to just mark both the beginning and the ending of something.
And celebrate you three in your fabulous exhibition.
Mm. And to say thank you to people who have helped us as well. Yeah, you know, there's lots of people coming that have been part of it.
Yeah, that's right.
So the opening is free for everyone. Everyone is welcome. So if you've never been to an opening before, please come along. You are more than welcome. Mm. But it is a lovely chance to see the artists, to see all that work just come together and just be celebrated. So if you are around.
Public service announcement, though. If anyone is driving over the Rimutaka Hill from Wellington, there is a road closure. And so you will need to leave Masterton probably around 8 because they will be closing the hill at 9. So if you're planning on going out on the town afterwards and then driving back, you might get stuck.
Good public announcement. Thank you. Very thoughtful. That just leaves me to say thank you so much to Catherine, Karen and Emily for joining me in the studio this afternoon. It's been fabulous and absolutely stunning exhibition. You should be so proud of yourself. It's absolutely marvellous. It's on to the 2nd of March. So you've got ages to come and see it. And yeah, I think it's going to be absolutely fabulous. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Becky.
And see you next month. Now, next month we've got Sarah and Joe, my colleagues at Adatoy, going to come and join us and talk about all things this year, last year, and what's coming up for next year. So don't miss that. As I said at the beginning, if you have missed the last 20 episodes, you can just go back and listen online on either YouTube or via the podcast. So you can do that. Okay, see you next month, everybody. See you later.